Blog Talk Radio.
Thank you for tuning in. My name is Jawanza, and you're listening to another edition of Jawanza for Life. I am very, very, very excited to have you along this evening, and you will see why momentarily. You remember last year we were doing a series on the 11 laws of God with Orwa Hehimetura and Comet. Well, the series is picked back up, okay? We've got two more shows left in this particular series, two more faculties to cover. And we've gone through the 11 laws. Actually, we've gone through 9 of them, and we've got 2 more to go. And the show that we're going to be doing this evening is on the law of offset. Okay, and I'm very excited to have Brother Orwa back. In case you're not familiar with Brother Orwa, you will be after this show. But until the show gets underway, let me tell you a little bit about him. Orwa Hehimetura and Comet has been a member of the Osiris Set Society since 1975. He was appointed Orwa, which is Paramount King, by Shechem Meshechem Ra'un Nefer Armen, chief and priest and king of the Osiris Set Society. As Orwa, he's been responsible for guiding the lives of Osiris Set's members and the society's activities in Maryland, Virginia, and Washington, D.C. He's a member of the society Harry Hebb priesthood and headed Osiris Set African Support Project. He holds a bachelor's degree in African American Studies and a master's degree in education, both from Howard University. He has named and supervised the naming of hundreds of men, women, and children using the process described in his book, African Names, which is, again, African Names, the Ancient Egyptian Keys to Unlocking Your Power and Destiny. Brother Orwa Hehimetura and Comet, it's certainly a pleasure to have you back to Jawanza for Life. It's been a few months, and we missed the teachings, and I'm glad to have you back so we can resume and pick up where we left off. Thank you so much for agreeing to be my guest this afternoon.
Good enough. Thank you for having us back. Excited to continue.
Julia, brother, it's an honor. Again, we're talking about the 11 laws of God. For the listeners who are just tuning in and this is your first show, we're going to give you a little bit of background as to what the 11 laws of God are. And again, I want to thank my brother Orwa Hehimetura and Comet. He's a busy man and has taken time out of his schedule to be my guest this afternoon. Brother Orwa, again, for there are a lot of listeners who are tuning in. We've advertised this show. And I know there are a lot of members, and I'd like to say hello to the members of the Osiris Set Society who've tuned in, the members of Healthy 247 who've tuned in, and everybody else who's listening. Hetep, I want to let you know that if you press 1, if you have a question and you'd like to make a comment and speak with Brother Orwa, all you have to do is just press 1, and it will let me know that you would like to come on, and I'll bring you on board. But, again, we've been discussing the 11 laws of God, but for those who might not know anything about the 11 laws of God, the first introduction to the 11 laws of God. Brother Orwa, can you give us a brief background? What are the 11 laws of God? And if you can give a brief overview of the laws that we've covered so far that has brought us up to this law tonight, which is the law of Osset.
Well, in the Kemetic scriptures, the creation script, which has been recorded around 2100 BC or so, called the declarations of the manifestations of Ra and overthrowing of Pep. The Supreme Being is quoted as saying that before anything was brought into existence, it first brought into existence the law. And then it used the law as the foundation to create the world, all the things that we know as a part of creation. So the premise is that if the Supreme Being stands on the law, and as above, so below, then so too should man stand on the law. And so our ancestors identified what's called the Patna Tiru, or the company of gods, or the 11 laws, if you will, through which we're able to, by living these laws, awaken the divinity that's within us and become the God-men and God-women that we're destined to be. Because in ancient Kemet, everyone's goal in life was to become an Osir. An Osir is the personification of the man or woman who has overcame sin and thereby is proclaimed to be a person who has lived truth in their life and hence a divine man or a divine woman. And the way to overcome sin is by being able to each day through your life state and have it verified that you have in fact lived according to the laws of God, which are these 11 laws. And so I'll just run down the laws just quickly.
Okay.
We really don't have the time to
if you could just
into, yeah, a background on each law, but I'll just run them down and we'll just discuss it from there.
You could just speak up a little bit though, brother. Thank you.
Okay, sorry. So the first law is the law of Amen. And the law of Amen simply states that our true nature is one of peace. And if I approach life, if I understand that my nature is to be peaceful, then every situation that I come in contact with, I have to allow peace to be the way that I address that situation. And just a quick, you know, quick examples. We understand and science has proven that any time a person gets upset, anger, whatever, that not only does it harm the body in terms of releasing harmful chemicals in the bloodstream, cortisol, et cetera, adrenaline, et cetera, but it also lowers one's IQ. So then the premise is that nothing that's harmful to us can be natural to us. So if peace is the natural response that we should have, then peace is the foundation upon which we have to address each and every situation that comes in our life. You know, it's like in the martial arts, they tell you that, you know, the person who gets upset in battle loses the fight. Even though you're in the midst of a combat situation, you have to remain at peace. And thereby doing so, you can marshal the correct response to whatever the challenge is that you're facing. So the second law is the law of Osir, which essentially says if peace is my nature, then there is nothing that can be against me. Nothing and no one. So the law of Osir is the premise of unity, that everything is a part of one unit. Everything is a part of one expression. That God created a world, and that world is the vehicle through which God expresses itself. So even though things may appear to be opposite to one another and may have appearance of opposite functions, in reality they're complementary. And if I understand that everything is a complement to everything else, then nothing is really opposed to anything else. Everything is working toward a common goal, a unified approach to life. And if I approach everything in life from that perspective, understanding that peace being my foundation, then I'm able to reconcile whatever disagreements or issues come up during the course of my living experience. As we get toward reconciliation, that leads us to the third law, which is the law of Tehuti, which essentially says that everything that I address in life must, every so-called opposition that I come across must be resolved in a win-win fashion, meaning that if you and I have a disagreement, and I allow, if I say I have the upper hand, and say I'm a physician over you, I'm your boss or whatever, and I allow that my stature or my position to, and use that to take advantage of you, I'm not going to be able to function in a peaceful way with you. I'm not going to be able to function in a unified way with you, because essentially you're going to harbor these feelings against me or against the situation.
Mm-hmm.
And though you may not have the power or the circumstance to exert a corrective response to take me out of my position or whatever, you're also not going to be at peace in the situation, so there's not going to be a oneness. The oneness that we spoke about earlier is not going to be able to manifest. So
mm-hmm.
I must be able to go to God. God gives us, God sends us into the world with these 11 laws, which equip us to deal with any and every situation that we need to come in contact with in the appropriate and proper way. So I need to be able to get the wisdom to see how to address any challenge I have such that it comes out in a win-win fashion. That way there's no opposition and there's no further problems down the road, because everyone walks away feeling that we're made whole in the situation. It may not be identical, but what I need is not necessarily going to be the same thing that you need in any given situation. But if each of us walk away understanding and feeling and knowing that we come away with what we need, if we both win in the situation, then there's no future problems that are going to come up relative to whatever that situation is. The fourth law, which would be the law of Secker, says that essentially I have the power to make anything happen in the world, right? If these 11 laws are the 11 laws through which God expresses itself in the world, then these are the laws by which God operates, but these are also the laws within man. And so we have the same faculties as Supreme Being. So that if God is an omniscient reality, so too does man possess the ability to experience what we know as omniscience, which means all-knowing. That leads us to be able to reconcile the problems that we spoke about earlier. If God is an omnipresent reality, so too does man have the ability to experience omnipresence, which means being at one with all things at the same time. That leads us, that's the first law of Osir. But God is also an omnipotent reality, meaning God also has the power to make anything real and make anything happen in life, which means that so too does man have the capacity to be able to manifest whatever is needed in life. All I need do is to make sure that all of my energies, all of the motive forces within me, my emotions, whatever, I have to sync them up with the divine will, with what is God's will in the situation. And if I do so, then there's nothing that I cannot accomplish. So that's the law of Secker. The law of Ma'at is basically saying that God created the world in order for it to experience itself, its potentials, its capabilities. In order for God to experience what it means to be omniscient, omnipresent, and omnipotent, there has to be a vehicle or a space through which these things can be experienced. Prior to manifestation, the energy of the Supreme Being is at rest. The spirit is at rest. And since it's at peace, there's no forces there moving. There's no distinction. There's no space. There's no time. So hence, if there's no place in existence, you can't be omnipresent. So God creates a world of places, an infinite number of places, through which it can experience itself in order to realize the omnipresence. And so the law of Ma'at says that God uses me as a vehicle through which to experience life on earth, because man is the one vehicle through which God can experience the fullness of its reality. All other created realities are limited and structured and thereby not able to go beyond the nature of their being. But man is the one creator, one creation, I should say, through which the omniscience and the omnipotence and omnipotence of the Supreme Being can be made real in life. So if the law of Mott says that God created me as a vehicle through which it can experience itself, and by living that law, living a life that will allow God, that this expression is the greatest experience of love in the world. So love is not based on just any feeling that I have towards something or another. We like to say, well, I love basketball or I love this. No, love is has a much higher reality. Love is understanding that there is but one reality. And when I give to something, it's a selfless expression because I'm not seeking anything in return. I'm not seeking the feeling of a gratitude. I'm not seeking the feeling of fulfillment because my spirit is at peace. And if I'm at peace, then there's nothing, and that peace is unshakable, then there's nothing that can disturb that peace. So everything I do is an expression of that peace, which is a manifestation of God's love. The sixth law, which would be Heru Kahuti, essentially says that everything that has happened in life is based on law. And if as long as I'm living according to the law, then I reap the benefits of those decisions. If I violate the law, then I also reap the benefit of that decision. That God doesn't punish anyone for anything. What we do sets up the circumstance for the response to any violations of the law that we have. So it's like when you get onto an airplane, if the pilot came onto the loudspeaker and said, well, you know, we're about to take off. We're not sure if we've worked out all the science that will keep this plane afloat if we get into the air. If we get up there, we're not certain if we've worked out the science. We don't know if the science we've worked out is going to allow us to keep you comfortable, whether or not, you know, because it gets cold, higher up the altitude, it's like latitude and altitude go the same. When you go up, it gets colder. We're not sure if we're going to be able to keep you comfortable, keep the ventilation systems going. We're not sure if the autopilot or the navigation system is going to work to be able to direct us to the right place. We're not sure if the flaps and the rudder and all these things are going to work to help steer us as we're making these challenges through this space. We're not sure when we get ready to land if the landing gear is going to come down, if we're going to be able to, you know, break and all the things that we need to do. We're just not certain about if this stuff's going to work. Everyone would be rushing to get off the plane. But because we know based on law and the navigation of this experience that they've worked out the science, the laws that govern aeronautics and all that stuff, then we're confident in making that journey. So as long as I'm living according to the law, then the result that I'm going to have is going to be appropriate and beneficial. But if I violate the law, you know, gasoline was made to give cars energy, but it won't work too well in your body. So if you drink gasoline, you're going to have some problems. Your car will feel fine. The higher the octane, the more the more power. Higher octane gasoline you drink, the worse you're going to be. So as long as I live according to the law, I'm going to reap the benefit of that experience. So the law of Heru Kahuti is about reestablishing equilibrium. If something is pushed too far to the right, yeah, go ahead.
Mm-hmm. I was just going to ask you, what if the law is inadvertently? What if someone violates the law inadvertently? If it's not a premeditated thing, they're not trying to violate it. They might actually think that they're doing the right thing, but they still break the law.
Well, how many people end up in the hospital behind food poisoning? You go to a restaurant. Obviously, you didn't come to Sinbad Cafe here in Washington. So you decide to eat someplace else. And you end up getting some tainted meat or some tainted something or another. And you end up in the hospital. Well, you didn't do anything wrong. But what you consumed was not desirable for your system. So, there's an old saying, ignorance of the law is no excuse. The fact that you didn't know that the lettuce or the meat was tainted doesn't give your body the pass to say, oh, well, you know, he won't get sick on this one. We'll just let him go because he didn't realize that this restaurant was selling this bad meat. No, you're going to reap the decision of what you made.
Okay.
So the seventh law, which would be the law of Heru, says that I have the right, I have the power, but not the right, to do the wrong thing, to choose to do the wrong thing. Meaning, we have a free will, which is what separates us from all this, all else in creation. You know, rabbits are going to only do what rabbits do. They're not, in spite of what you might see on TV, they're not going to be able to do other stuff. And so Bugs Bunny is a fictional character.
Right.
Lions are not going to decide to become vegan. It's just not going to happen.
Right.
Their nature is programmed to sustain off of the diet that they've been put in place. But man, on the other hand, we have the ability to, we're supposed to sleep at night. We should be getting our best, and all the science supports this, but we have the ability, the free will, which enables us to override our programming, to go against our programming. And so people can stay up all night, as people do stay up all night. Some people work during the night. It doesn't absolve them from the law. The law says that we should sleep at night because they find that insurance statistics will show that people who work at night have fewer incidences of accidents on the job, more incidents of accidents on the job, more time off the job due to illness, et cetera, less productive in terms of performance. So we can choose to go against the law. But the question is, do we really have the right to do so? And the answer from the Heru perspective is no. Once I've identified what's the correct thing to do, then I'm responsible for making those decisions based on what I know to be correct. The law of Heru says essentially that images, what I see, the visualizations I hold, the images I hold in my mind are going to influence my behavior. It's going to influence how I move and what I go about doing it. So the question is, what am I looking at? What do I see? Do I see myself as a divine being, which means I see myself living a sinless life, overcoming the challenges I'm faced through living these 11 laws, or do I see myself as a human being, which we know is naturally flawed? You've seen the commercial. Human beings are going to mess up things. And so our world is a construct of human beings. And we see the result of that each and every day. You know, we see the fact that the weather, the climate is changing through human expression. You know, we see that people are being taken advantage of, people are enslaved, people are murdered, et cetera. And this is all based on human behavior. So, and don't say, well, these are just the unenlightened people. You know, slavery, the process that brought us over here was conducted by the well-educated people in Europe. These are the people that went to Edinburgh and, you know, the other great universities of it. You know, the, all of the it's the wise, oops, bad word, it's the educated people who've created this, all these things that are messing up the environment. This wasn't done by, you know, people that were sweeping streets. These are the people with PhDs in chemistry and all these other fields that have created all these things that people are using that are creating the problem with the environment. So we don't want to look at, we have to understand that to be human is to be flawed. And if we want a flawless world, if we want to create a world in which we're able to reconcile all of our problems, then we have to tap into something beyond the human, and that's the divine image that we need. So when we go back and say that man, God created man in his image and likeness, then we're saying that our people, our ancestors in ancient Kemet said it is true, and we have historical records to show that hundreds of people, that's in terms of records that are still in existence. Of course, there are many more, but we have records of hundreds of people who were proclaimed by their, the people in their society to be an Osir at the, at their death, meaning that these were people who overcame sin. So the process of overcoming sin is not something that's relegated to one special individual. It was the goal of each and every person in ancient Kemet to be the become an Osir. And so the images that we hold help to shape how we see and what we do in our lives. So if I see myself as a human being, or worse yet, as an animal, as we're taught in school, that man is nothing but an animal, then expect the view of that. What you see is what you get. Expect that we're going to see animalistic and human behaviors. The ninth law, which would be the law of Sebek, says that it's the same concept in terms of how I see myself, but it's the ideas and beliefs that I hold about myself. If I believe that I'm a human, if I believe that I'm an animal, then that belief is going to shape the cellular responses in my body in order to facilitate what I hold myself to be. So I need to see myself as a divine being. I need to believe that I'm a divine being in order for the forces within me to be marshaled to create the image and the response and reaction of a divine being. Which brings us to tonight's discussion.
Okay.
The law of Oset.
Well, tonight we're going to be discussing the law of Oset, and I'll read the law. The law of Oset states, prepare to sacrifice everything to become the vessel of God on earth, and you will, in turn, receive everything. I'll read it one more time. Law of Oset, prepare to sacrifice everything to become the vessel of God on earth, and you will, in turn, receive everything. Law of Oset.
Okay, so in essence,
yes,
what's being said mm-hmm. here is that in order to change, to transform something from where it is to where you want it to be, you have to make changes. If I want to become a divine being, then I have to be willing to give up everything I know about the human and the animal as my point of reference in terms of my identity. Otherwise said, if I know that I'm a divine being by nature, then I have to make the changes in my life in order to manifest that divinity by overcoming the programming of my spirit, the human and the animal programming within my spirit. And the way that that transformation takes place, the way that this change takes place, is through the process of trance induction. meaning we have a subconscious mind. And the subconscious mind is the part of the mind which through which our responses are programmed into our spirit. And these are over generations and lifetimes of behavior.
Mm-hmm.
It's what keeps us alive, right? When you're riding down the street in your car and you're thinking about, you know, what you're going to have for dinner, you're not focused on the road, but you're able still to navigate the road safely because of the subconscious mind. It's what's keeping you alive. When you're pushing a lawnmower and that blade is cutting the grass and you're thinking about, you know, what the basketball game you saw yesterday or waiting to get in to see another game and you don't cut your foot off, it's because the subconscious mind is keeping you alive. So we have this masterful part of our being which is programmed and programmable to keep us alive and to facilitate our responses to the circumstances of life. Then we have the conscious mind. And the conscious mind is the part of the mind which is constantly evaluating things. But I think the numbers are something like for every bit of knowledge, bit that the conscious mind is processing, the subconscious can process 200,000 times that or something. Something phenomenal. Meaning that the true power within us rests in our subconscious. So the challenge in life becomes, well, how do I make these changes that I need to make in my life? We know that through experience, you can't just talk yourself into change. You know, every year, people do that. Every year, come January the 1st, people are talking themselves into the person they want to be. And it may last until January the 2nd. And everything is out the window.
If you're lucky.
So talk, as the people of wisdom say, talk doesn't cook the food. We have two parts to our being. We have a conscious part of our being and a spirit part of our being. Consciousness is what enables us to perceive reality, to evaluate things, etc. It's the being part of being, if you will. And the spirit is the performer, it's the functional part of being. And the mystical marriage is when I take my consciousness and I can unite the consciousness, which is my identity with the Supreme Being. It's the consciousness that I am is the same consciousness that we call the Supreme Being. When I'm able to wed that consciousness with the spirit such that the spirit becomes the vehicle to realize that which consciousness has perceived. So if I perceive myself as a divine being, and I take that perception into trance and program my spirit, then each and every time I am challenged in life, I will respond as a divine being. But we're talking about we have to overcome thousands of years of pre-programming from the animal parts of the spirit and the human parts of the spirit. So me just saying I'm a divine being doesn't make me function as a divine being because the animal is going to function through the animal perspective. The human is going to function through the human perspective. And the only way the divine can manifest is by me going into and transforming the response mechanism. And that's what Osset represents. It's that trance induction, going into trance and reprogramming the spirit so that it manifests in according with the law. Now, how do I do that? Well, we do that through meditation. So meditation is the vehicle through which I'm able to reprogram my spirit. Now, how does meditation work? Well, we're talking about perception and responses to perception of reality. And we know that if I'm running down the street, crossing the street, I need to be paying attention to what's going on the street. So that the rate at which my brain needs to function when I'm in that kind of environment is not conducive to training or transforming behavior, because I'm in a survival mode now. And survival mode is focused on keeping me just that, in a survive, to be able to survive the experience. When I sit down and begin to reflect and introspect, then that's when my spirit becomes more receptive to change. And there's a transformation between the brain, how the brain, the wave function of the brain, and these different states of behavior. So when I'm running around, et cetera, my brain's in a beta state, which is an externalized state. When I sit down and begin to read or study or whatever, and or begin to meditate, it drops my brain waves down into what we call the alpha state. And this is a state where I can begin now to affect the programming, begin to change the programming of the subconscious part of my being. But also, when I sit down and this is all associated with and controlled by my breathing pattern, my breathing rate. When I'm running around the streets, crossing the street, watching cars, etc., I'm breathing at an average rate of 18 breaths per minute, which keeps my consciousness focused in the beta state or the survival state. When I sit down to read or study, my breathing naturally slows down, which naturally begins to change my brainwave patterns. But the trick to the process is that whenever you sit down and slow the breathing down, you run the risk of losing focus of consciousness. You end up daydreaming or going to sleep or whatever. And if I'm trying to reprogram the spirit with a new response pattern, I have to be able to focus in on that response pattern, that image, and go into trance, into the meditation state, and begin to reprogram the response mechanism. But if I'm daydreaming, if I lose focus, etc., then I'm not going to be able to do that. So the alpha is the beginning of that process. But when I slow my breathing down even more into the theta state and or even lower into the delta state, now my brain is in a state where it is highly programmable. My spirit is highly programmable to the new behavior that I want. So when that law says I have to be willing to sacrifice everything, it means I have to be willing to change my response mechanisms such that it's not the things of life that are moving me. It's the understanding that I am essentially, my spirit is essentially no thing. The things of life we believe are what give us happiness. Let's take us back up to the top law, amen. But the reality is, happiness doesn't come from things. Happiness comes from being at peace when I have something, and being at peace when I lose it. If peace is my nature, having something doesn't give me happiness, and losing something doesn't take it away. Happiness is not predicated on things. So if I'm in a state, a mental state, where I can now reprogram my response mechanisms with this law of amen, then whatever it is that happens to me in life, whatever I have or don't have, I'm not going to lose my peace. I'm going to enjoy the fact that I have something, and I'm going to enjoy the fact that I enjoy the peace when I don't have it. So things don't determine happiness. But that's what that law says. I have to be willing to give up everything. It's understanding that thing is not what gives me, doesn't make me. The clothes don't make the man. The idea doesn't make the man. The job don't make the man. The man is essentially an expression of nothingness, an expression of peace, and how I respond to the circumstances in my life is what determine who I am. Am I a divine being or a human being? Am I a divine being or am I functioning through the animal part of my spirit? So the key to our sex
this is powerful.
Is meditation, is trance. So it's the foundation, meaning even though it's the law at the bottom of the tree, basically, it is the foundation upon which everything rests. I mean, the root of the tree is what enables the branches and the trunk to expand.
You know, Brother Orwell, this information is very, very powerful. And for someone that's listening that might hear this information and be really absorbing it and thinking to themselves, okay, I need to go into meditation. They're hearing this information and they're like, okay, I really need to start meditating. I need to work with the law of Oset. Okay. Question, should they start, I mean, you just mentioned that although it's at the, you know, almost at the very bottom of the tree and that the root supplies nourishment to the branches, can a person work with the law of Oset without having to understand what you just mentioned concerning the law of Amen, or is it an absolute necessity that before you even can begin to start to work with the other laws, you have to have the fundamental understanding that you were made in the likeness of a peace that nothing can disturb, and that you are one with all, you know, just coming down the tree before they can actually start working with certain other aspects of the tree, certain information, would you agree, is vital? For example, just the fact that you are divine and that your nature is peace and so forth as you come down the tree?
Well, the answer to that question is yes and no and yes. Meaning that should they? The answer is yes. Do they have to? The answer is no, because everyone is constantly going in and out of the meditation state. Where people say they can't meditate. Well, meditation is basically anytime your attention, your consciousness, is withdrawn from the world around you, the external world, and you're in the mental space, you're in what we call the meditation state. And there's depths to this state. There's light trance, there's deep trance, etc. But you're there. Now the problem is, what's going on while you're there? Are you imaging the quote unquote the mean thing that someone said to you or did to you, and you're in this state vowing, seeing yourself upset or angry or whatever, and sowing that response mechanism into your spirit? I mean, that's taking place all the time. We're always going in and imaging it. Think about it this way, and you can do this test with anybody you meet. You can try this at home.
Okay.
People, it's so much better for us to image a positive outcome to a situation. But for the most part, people respond to negative imagery. Hold on to negative. People are always looking at, well, what can go wrong? People are always looking at, well, what did go wrong? You know, the old concept of baggage. People hold on to stuff that happened 50 years ago. And refuse to make that thing go, let it go. So, and they're holding on to it. Every time you visualize it, you're reinforcing that program into your spirit. So you can't transform your being if you don't let go of what's already there. So that's the whole thing about giving up everything. In order to become a divine being, we have to give up all that's human about us. We're still going to have a human body, but we're going to function on a different level.
Wow, you know, I think it's so interesting that just even in the word transform is the word trance, you know. So even if, I mean, and I think that over the years, people, trance, just the word trance has gotten a bad rap. You know, when people think of trance, they, you know, I think images of something spooky comes into people's minds when they think of the word, you know. So if you could just elaborate just a bit on trance and, you know, just what that is, because, again, people, they just to overcome whatever preconceived notions people may have about the word because of the images that they may have seen on television with, you know, different things, even hypnosis and so forth. Could you just briefly just dispel some things about the trance statement, the trance word, and what it is?
Well, essentially what you said is accurate, meaning that trance, whenever your mind, whenever your focus, your awareness is withdrawn from the physical world around you into the mental space, you're in trance. We're just talking about terms, different terms that are used. They call, it's like, for example, you know, years ago, everything was controlled and caused by spirits, right? And then there was a battle that took place between the intelligentsia and the religious community over what was causing problems. So then the intellectuals came up with a concept called the psyche. So now you have psychology, psychiatry. So now we have problems. These are not spiritual problems. These are mental problems. Well, the term that they use to psych is a Greek term for spirit. So they just took the same reality and gave it a new label. So what we have, what we call trance, is what people call the mental space. You know, all this is the same reality. It's in levels of energy. It's expressions of energy. And the label that you give it, and based on your belief in that label, has programs your response to the label. So if I want to keep you away from being able to transform your life, to make changes, to become a full, independent, divine being, then I'm going to create a spookiness around the very thing that will lead you to that reality.
Mm-hmm.
And so that's a part of the programming. There's a movement to always keep people powerless so that a few can control the many. Well, and we do that through the ideas and the beliefs that we sow into people's minds. If I sow into your spirit that you are a sinner by nature, then expect you to sin. But if I sow into your spirit the belief that you can overcome sin, then that frees you to be able to make changes in your life. So it's all about the concepts, the beliefs, the ideas, the wording that's been used. And trance has just been given a negative light simply to keep people powerless, because it's the true power. The power of transforming, the power of the spirit, the power of becoming and making this world something new is through cultivation and direction of the trance experience.
To all the listeners out there, my special guest is Orwa Hehi Metura in Comet. I hope you're enjoying this as much as I am. If you have a question or would like to make a comment, speak to Brother Orwa, all you have to do is press 1 and I'll bring you on board. Brother, if you could talk about the emotions, you know, and the role that, you know, emotions play in the discussion of Auset and in meditation, because, you know, just even if you can talk about how we choose mates, we pick food, We make careers, you know, based on how we feel about a particular thing, and that how we feel about it is often based on programming. Could you talk about emotions and the need to overcome our human emotions and how that interplays with the discussion that we're having tonight on the law of offset?
Well, the word emotion simply means to move, to give movement to something, right? E means outward, like to exit, you get emit, et cetera. That E preface gives the energy of an outward expression. So an emotion is just an outward expression of motion or energy. So emotions are not the problem. Emotions are expressions of our very life. If you don't have any emotions, you're dead. So the problem is not emotions. The problem is, what are you emoting to or towards? Am I emoting and by moving towards awakening my divinity? Right? It's the emotions that will give us the ability to manifest each of these 11 laws. These 11 laws, just look at them another way, these are the 11 urges within our spirit, the 11 movements within our spirit. We have a natural movement, urge, movement towards, emotion towards peace. Everybody wants peace, right? We hear it all the time. Man, there's no peace. No justice, no peace. Everybody wants peace. But everybody, so there's a natural urge for peace. So that's an emotional desire, a force within us. Everybody wants that. Everybody wants to be. There are a few people, let me rephrase it. There are a few people who don't want to be hooked up with other folks, don't want to understand and be connected with other people. But the majority of people want to get along with other people. You know, people don't go out, most people, sane people, people who are not ill, don't go out looking for problems. People really want problems solved. Everybody wants peace. Peace is an expression of is the reality of solved problems.
Mm-hmm.
People, sane people, sick, well people, let me say it another way, well people, don't want to take advantage of others. There's the old saying, there's enough in this world for everyone. Well, the fact of the matter is that's true. And a person who is well, spiritually well, will seek out relationships and circumstances where, which are mutually beneficial. So these 11 laws, or these natural urges, these emotions within us, and the fourth law, the law of Seker, says it best. When I link my emotions to the divine will, then now I'm making real the reality of my divinity. So emotions are not the problem. It's the emotion. It's the, when we allow ourselves to function through the emotional expressions of our animal spirit, the lower parts of our brain, and the human spirit, part of the spirit. That's where we get into problems. So the challenge is to transform, to go into trance and redirect that response, that emotion, that movement outward, such that I no longer am acting out as a human, but now I'm acting out as a divine being.
Well, for everybody listening, you're going to have to take it into meditation because just the declaration of, you know, I'm going to do better, I'm going to be better. If you could have done better and been better, then you wouldn't be making the declaration. You wouldn't be making the declaration today. Brother, we have a few moments left. If you could talk about, speaking of that, just willpower and, you know, just that the two terms seem opposing of each other, you know, they just seem like a misnomer, will and power, because the will has no power. So if you could talk about willpower and the need again for people to, if they want to see the behavior modification, that they're going to have to just understand that just making the declaration, you talked briefly about how every New Year's people state, and if they're lucky they make it to January the 2nd, what they're going to do on January the 1st, and just that phrase willpower and just how that is not in, it's not something that actually exists. And it makes, you know, they say that people are strong-willed, that if somebody says, okay, I'm going to do such and such, and they stick to it, that they say that this person has a strong, has, you know, evidenced strong willpower, and somebody that, you know, says I'm on January the 1st, I'm going to start exercising, and, you know, they don't start, that they lack willpower.
No, but you said it. The will is powerless. It doesn't matter how many times or how hard you say something. That doesn't make a reality. You have to put power with the will. The will and the power have to unite. It's out of the spirit. The spirit is the performer. The will is a part of consciousness. The will is merely the decision to do something. And that's how we have to look at it. When I decide I'm going to do something, I'm expressing my will. But just the fact that I say I'm going to do it doesn't mean that it's actually going to take place. I'm actually going to follow through. In order for me to follow through, I have to link that decision with the spirit, the power. I have to take it into trance. I have to reprogram my subconscious such that now I am, when confronted with that stimulus, I respond in the appropriate way. It's like a person who has a habit, like let's say cigarettes. Cigarettes are a classic habit. There are people who say, I can quit smoking anytime I want to. I've done it 100 times, which in reality means that they really didn't quit smoking. They said they were going to quit. They decided they're going to quit. But the functional part of their being wasn't reprogrammed to overcome the stimulus that the habit itself had created within their spirit. It's when you're able to take that challenge and overcome, transform the energy of the habit that you're able to make it real. And that's where the meditation comes from. That's the power of the spirit. I mean, in the Kemetic cosmogony, Osset, which is the symbol of the trance experience, the transformation, the ability to make things change, gives birth to Heru, the will. So the will, for my will to be functional, it has to come out of the transformation of my spirit. It's just not enough to say I'm going to do something. I got to change the programming within my subconscious, within my spirit. And that's done through meditation.
Mm-hmm. Well, I know that there are two systems, at least two systems, that, you know, the Asarset work with, Minab meditation and Wahab meditation. Could you please briefly discuss or, you know, state the difference between those two, and then we can also tell the listeners, if they're interested in learning more about how they can actually purchase the book. I know that there's a book on Wahab and Minab, and you can actually learn how to meditate and start the process of behavior modification. Could you discuss the Minab and the Wahab briefly?
Okay. Well, let's focus on the Minab. The Minab says that for me to change, I have to be able to put my heart at rest, put it at peace, because the heart is symbolic of that which moves us. It's the passions, the energy, etc., right? If somebody is really into something, say, well, your heart is into it, meaning that you really got your energy flowing into it. So if that's a problem for you, right, then we gotta steal the heart, which means that we're not stealing. You're not gonna be able to steal initially the emotional response to the circumstance, but you have to steal your mental response to the circumstance. You have to hold on to what you know is correct. So back to the smoking habit. if I say I'm going to stop smoking, and I know that there are certain circumstances which stimulate the desire to smoke, I eat, you know, whatever. Just because I say I'm not going to smoke anymore doesn't mean I'm not going to have the urge to smoke. So the only way to be successful in overcoming this habit is for me to, quote-unquote, min ebit, meaning to still my heart, to still the urge when I feel it and do the right thing. Now, people will say, some people will say, well, you're suppressing. You know, the psychologists tell you that if you don't, you know, if you feel like doing something and you don't do it, that you're suppressing. No, you're only suppressing if what you're talking about doing isn't the correct thing. If, think about this. If you feel like someone said something to you and you allow your emotions to move you in a negative way, and you say, well, I feel like killing this person. And, you know, following the psychological logic, it says if you feel like you should do something and you don't do it, you're suppressing. Well, no, you're suppressing if it's not the right thing to do. So if you know that harming someone else is incorrect and you don't follow through with that urge, you're not suppressing. You're living truth. You're doing the right thing. And it's by following through on doing the right thing that we're able to weaken the natural urge to follow through to do the wrong thing. So anyone who has successfully overcome smoking realizes that initially, when you say you're not going to smoke, the urge is going to be there. It's going to be strong to automatically smoke. But if you hold on to what you know is correct, if you hope men have that situation, then eventually the urge to smoke disappears. Why? Because the energy now has been reprogrammed into a new behavior, which is not smoking.
Right.
So that's the essence of the system. So we have to we have to unite the will with the power, and meditation is the vehicle through that. Now, but there, this is not. We talked about becoming a divine being, and we need to put this caveat out there as well. This is not something that you can do alone. You know, you just don't sit down and say, well, I'm going to become a divine being, and you just, you know, begin to do that work. We need guidance, because we're talking about over 100,000 years, millions of years of programmed behavior into the human spirit that needs to be changed. And we need to be able to identify what needs to be changed, when it needs to be changed, and know the processes through which we can make those changes when necessary. And for that, you're going to need some guidance. You're going to need a spiritual guide or a spiritual system, an initiation system, in order to guide us through the process. So we focus in on and we orchestrate the response to these 11 laws through what we call the Osiris initiation system. And so now is the time when we begin to act on this system, begin to look at these laws and begin to reprogram our psyche to begin looking at the world and the response, our response to the world through this new view. So you need a guide, you need an initiation system to help move us from the human into the divine. It's not that you just don't grow, become divine by age. You know, you just become an older human being. To change from human, we need initiation. So that's another process. So we have these workshops and classes, et cetera, that we teach that are designed to help facilitate this transformation. So in terms of workshops, we have several workshops coming up in the next couple months that I just have a few moments so if we can just throw those out there. This coming Saturday,
please,
we'll have a workshop on the equinox, the spring equinox, the importance of the equinox and how we can use this time to facilitate the transformation from the human into divine. And then the same Saturday we'll have a workshop because I mentioned earlier that well people don't do this or well people do that. Well, the fact of the matter is we be illing because of all the issues that we're faced with, and this, I mean, it's a toxic environment. And it's something like, I think the number is something like 5,000 new toxic chemicals are created and released into the environment every day. It's incredible. There's all kinds of bad behaviors that are associated with, you know, a lot of bad food, bad ingestion of toxins and chemicals and et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. So there's so much that our system is being affected by that we have to begin to rectify in order to get efficient and effective mental change because, you know, the mind follows the energy, the body. So if you take in a lot of garbage, it's going to reflect itself in the garbage thinking. So we have a workshop for males that after this Saturday, after the equinox workshop. We have a workshop for males designed to give men the nutraceuticals necessary to begin to fortify the body, give it the right energy necessary to make the transformation, to make the new proteins that are going to be necessary for the change of behavior. Every response in our body is a protein response. So if I want a new response, I got to create new protein chains in order to manifest that response. So we need good nutrition, proper herbs, proper nutraceuticals, etc., in order to make these transformations. So there's a workshop this Saturday after the equinox for men to identify the specific remedies and herbs, etc., that men need to make that. And then the first weekend in April the 4th, that Saturday, will be the same kind of thing, a day focused on providing that same kind of energy and focus, meditation experience, et cetera, for women. So that's what's coming up for the next couple months.
Okay. Wow. Everybody. Oh, by the way, Brother Oil, if you could give a number for people that are listening and they want to find out more of the times and so forth, costs and so forth. Could you give a number that they can call in D.C. so that they can get that information?
It's 202-723-5566.
Okay, that's 202-723-5566.
Correct.
Okay, and the address there in D.C.? Will these be taking place in Bed Complex?
Yes, 6224 3rd Street Northwest.
Okay. 6224 3rd Street Northwest. Brother Orwa, I want to thank you so much, my brother. This has been a fast hour. Was there any other announcements you have? I know you have the Tawi Saturdays. I believe that's new. Any information on that?
Well, once a month or so, we'll be having these special programs designed to highlight and focus in on specific aspects and areas of the overall approach that we use to cultivation of our divinity. So I mentioned the ones coming up this Saturday, the one in April, and then each month we have different programs coming up. In May, we'll have a program to prepare us for the solstice, the summer solstice. So, and then we have a program in June to discuss and enable the cultivation of the spiritual response necessary for us to live supporting our own businesses. You know, people have been talking about Buy Black for 50, 60 years, but
right,
it ain't happening. Why? There's a spiritual undertone to that, and we'll be discussing that.
Well, Brother Orwa, again, now somebody might have listened and heard you mention the Minab meditation. Can they get that and by calling New York? Can they call?
Yes,
can they get that by calling?
Tawi Enterprises, web www.tawi.enterprises or tawi.biz, and they can order that book and any of the other books. And there's new books always coming out to take the information and present it in a different way to address a different area of what we're doing. But then we'll also have classes that will be starting up in the next few weeks to deal with and address, you know, these areas in a concise and consolidated manner.
Okay, and Taui is spelled, everybody, that's T-A-U-I. T like Tom, A-U-I. That's how you spell Taui, Taui Enterprises. Can you give it again? www.taui.enterprises, did you say?
Yeah, Taui Enterprises or Taui.biz. Both should bring it up.
Okay. Brother Orwa, I thank you, sir. This has been an awesome interview, everybody. My special guest, Orwa Hehi Metura Nkamit, Paramount King of the Washington, D.C. region of the Osara Set Society, author of the fabulous book, African Names, The Ancient Egyptian Keys to Unlocking Your Power and Destiny. And again, everybody, if you want more information, if you're in the D.C. area and you'd like to learn more about what you heard, the number is area code 202-723-5566. And the next law we'll be discussing will be the law of Geb. You're listening to the 11 Laws of God. And again, Brother Orwa, any final remarks, my brother? I want to again thank you so much to all of the listeners. And then I want to say thank you. Healthy 247, thank you, Brother Orwa. Any parting words?
No, just thank you for the opportunity to share, and we'll hope everyone was able to move toward to awakening our divinity, because if we want a better world, we got to become better. And even if we don't all manifest our divinity 100% of the time, the world will be 100% better.
Well, Brother Orwa, you've had the final word. Again, to everybody, thank you. So I can't neglect my Richmond listeners. Thank you so much for tuning in. Brother Orwa, until the next time, I look forward to it. It's been a pleasure. You broke it down, my brother, again. And everybody, just want you to know we have an archive. So if you heard it and there's somebody that you know missed it and you know that they should have heard it, well, we have archives. So this show is about to be archived, and you can just tell them how you got it, and they can go back and listen to the archives. We've got the other 11. We've got the other laws of God that Orwa has already spoken on leading up to the law of Oset, which we discussed today. So if you are listening and you happen to have missed the other laws that he discussed, you can go back and listen to the other laws as well. Again, Brother Orwa, until the next time, my brother, I thank you so much. Peace to you.
Hetep.
Hetep. Everybody, that was Orwa Hehi Metura Nkamit, Paramount King of the Washington, D.C. region of the Osara Set Society. My name is Jawanza, and I'm just so thankful that you took time out of your day to tune in. I hope that it was as beneficial to you as I thought that it would be. Again, to all of the members of the Osara Set Society, and to everybody over at Healthy 247 Queen Common, thank you so much. I appreciate you. Thank you so much. Thank you so much. Thank you so much. Again, this is Jawanza for Life. My name is Jawanza. Peace and blessings. I love you.